Welcome to the Free Cities Podcast. My name is Timothy Allen, and this is the official podcast of the Free Cities Foundation. Hello, and welcome to episode number 62 of the Free Cities Podcast. Well, I hope you're well and that you are fulfilled and being productive this week. My life is still in somewhat of a disarray as we continue to move both home and office at the same time. And I've resigned myself now to the understanding that we will probably be surrounded by boxes for many more weeks to come. Anyway, today's show is another interview from Montenegro. Tatjana Bugrova is an active member of the Montelibro community who has bought a plot of land at MTL City, which is their fledgling libertarian community site. I caught up with her at the MTL Clubhouse in Bar in Montenegro, and we discussed her motivations for moving to Montenegro along with her hopes and expectations for the project. Now, if living in a libertarian community in Montenegro strikes a chord with you, then I'll point out a couple more episodes from this series. Firstly, way back in episode number 29 with a gentleman by the name of Jose Berkin, which is a two-hour deep dive into the community as a whole, including an overview of their blockchain token system, which they use for land ownership and community decision-making. And then there's episode 42 with a couple called Costa and Albina, who are both long-term digital nomads who bought one of the newly built apartments in MTL City. Also, in a similar vein to this conversation, we discuss living nomadically and the draw to settle in a community of like-minded people. Check the show notes for links to the community. They're highly approachable in my experience, a great community for you to investigate. If you're the pioneer type, I would say. Anyway, enjoy your weekend and I hope to see you all again next week, same time, same place. But in the meantime, of course, just sit back, relax, and enjoy my conversation with Tatjana Bugrova.
I don't know what you discussed already with
Jim,
probably a lot.
Yes. Well, I'll be honest with you. I'm working all this out. We've just been to the site. I've spoken to some people and I'm looking around. I'm trying to understand what's going on here because it's like really interesting. And we did talk a lot about the cryptocurrency aspect because I'm much more skeptical of tokens. I'm into Bitcoin massively, and so whenever anyone starts talking about tokens and tokenizing this, and I think of people printing tokens, making loads of money, and then pulling the rug, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
So we did talk a lot about that. So we don't need to go into that. I think I've made my peace with it. I see the need for the Euro stablecoin that you're using, and the MTL fund. I can see that you're using that as a kind of the token of the MTL fund. You're using that as a way to decide who can make the most, who can choose, who can make decisions in a kind of like a bit like proof of stake, but more like a DAO, as you said, a DAO in real life, isn't it?
Yeah. And look, I don't hold too many MTLs because I'm just as you, quite skeptical, especially seeing the market currently, and what happened to lots of tokens on the market. But I do hold your MTLs because we do really use it in everyday life. You know, some businesses are now connected. So I just bought myself some fish that's going to be delivered next week using your MTLs. We use it at the club. We use it. We'll be making a festival probably using your MTLs as well. So there is definitely a need for that currency. You know, because I am a libertarian, I am an anarchist, and I really want to use fiat money as little as possible, you know. So that's the way to do it now. If there will be a better way in the future, great. But again, you don't have to hold lots of MTLs and you can still be part of the community. You know, it's really the core values that are important, you know, and the projects that are doing within the community. And for example, I managed to get this plot of land in MTL City quite cheap, which I'm happy about. And I can legally register it on my name. So they tell me, Tanya, if you just want to go to the notary and register it on your name, no problem. But for now, it sits still on the fund land because just I'm not ready to do it yet. I hold an NFT for my plot of land.
Yes.
When I'm ready, I will register it on my name or on my company's name.
What we better do then before we go on is you introduce yourself. give me your name and then tell me a little bit about who you are and how you are, why you are in Montenegro.
Yeah.
Because you, go on.
So my name is Tatiana Bugrova. That's my surname. I originally come from Moscow, Russia. I studied history at the university, the top university, MSU, by Lomonosov. And I, right after graduating, I moved to the UK and pretty much did my career in sales and marketing within IT vendors, you know.
In where was that, London?
Kind of the area around London, Reading, Maidenhead.
Oh my God.
Yeah, that valley, Silicon Valley of the UK.
Not the most glamorous part of the UK, no.
Well, you know.
Reading. I broke down.
Oh, I know.
I broke down in Reading 3 weeks ago and I had to stay. Like, I didn't, not exactly break down, but the brakes on my car seized. Because it had been parked, I'd been abroad and it had been parked for a long time. And I had to stay in Reading for one night. I stayed in Reading, what's that really horrible chain of hotels? They're really cheap one. It was like the cheapest hotel I could
find.
There
are a few really cheap hotels in Reading.
Right, well, it was the most depressing thing ever. It was a horrible car park. It's just like, I couldn't wait to get out of Reading. But anyway, carry on, sorry.
Look, all right. Well, the last place where I just moved from was just outside of Beaconsfield, if it sounds any better.
No, I've never been there, fortunately.
No, Beaconsfield is actually quite a lovely place. And we were just in a village outside, not far from Bournemouth, on the River Thames. So that was lovely.
Okay, so how do you get from, well, near London to Montenegro? That's a bit of a strange move, isn't it? I mean, are you living here now?
I've just moved a week ago.
Oh.
Before I would go in and out and fly back, but yeah, now I am in Montenegro.
Wow.
Yeah.
Cool, man. What's that like?
Look.
Well, why don't you say why you did first? Because that's the interesting part, probably.
Yeah, I guess, you know, so I grew up in Russia and my parents own their own house and their own land, and I was always, I'm not a city girl, and I really love my countryside. I like feeling that I own something and I like contributing to the work in the garden. So I think in that sense, for me staying in the UK, it either means I need to go somewhere where I can afford a decent plot of land, which is not around London area where all my friends are, or I need to go abroad. So I started looking for land. I started learning about permaculture and to be as self-sufficient as possible. And Montenegro was on my list. So I didn't want to go too far from Europe because my family is in Russia and my partner's family is in Ireland. So we were looking at Portugal and Montenegro.
Why Montenegro though? I've never been here before. I've never, you know, like it's not on everyone's radar, believe me. It's like, I'm still piecing it together. You know, it's kind of like the Balkans. Yeah, I get it now. It's like, but it's different. It is slightly different. It seems more, less of, I don't know. Is there a national identity here?
So I think this country is one of the easy country to migrate to because there are a few different nationalities living here. You know, there are some Albanians, Bosnians, Croatians, Serbians. Montenegro established itself as a country in 2006 before they were part of Serbia. I mean, historically, they were a separate country. But I think because there is already such a mix in this country, and also since 2006, when they established themselves as a separate country, lots of Russians saw it as an opportunity, and they started buying land and properties, and we ended up having quite a big Russian-speaking community here, which makes it very easy for us to move here. So I have a few friends here, and I traveled here with my work in 2015, and I loved it. It looked so beautiful, the nature, and you know, the market was, it was much cheaper to buy back then, you know, especially when we compare to the UK. It's still cheaper to buy here than in the UK, obviously. And because it's not overpopulated, I like that it has lots of wilderness. So 85% of the country is mountains, so it's covered in forests, and you know, Montenegrins don't really do agriculture very much. So it has that aspect of, you know, kind of untouched nature, which I love, you know, especially being a person who is into permaculture. It's
there's a lot of olive trees, as far as I can see, especially up on the plot of land. They all seem incredibly old as well. Mm-hmm. You know, really lovely, beautiful olive groves and stuff, you know.
Yeah, look, I mean, it's a Mediterranean climate, but it's slightly more humid than, you know, the countries like, some parts of Italy and Spain, because of this mountainous area, they hold the clouds. So we have lots of beautiful thunderstorms and beautiful rain as well. Montenegrins, in spite of the fact that they're quite a small country, they actually have four different climate zones. So if you just drive an hour and a half from here, you'll be already in the mountains skiing. They have a wonderful ski resort called Kolašin, and it's actually growing actively. I love skiing. I love the sea. So it just felt like, all right, there is a community.
What's the ski season here then? What months are that?
It is December to April, but it can be sometimes a bit shorter, so late December, beginning of January, and then till March. But definitely till the end of March, you'll be able to ski.
And how is it? What are the resorts? Are they have resorts? And
yeah, they do have a few resorts. The one I've been to is Kolašin, and it's the biggest resort in Montenegro. It's half an hour drive from Podgorica, from the airport. It has 45 kilometers slopes, and the highest point I think is 2,100 meters, which is decent, you know.
What's the price of a lift pass?
Oh, I think it's 10 or 15 euros per day.
Oh, wow.
I know, wow. I know. And it's really lovely. That's what really you know, surprised me, because I've been to the Alps, I've been to, you know, Andorra, and I came over and I said, you know, it's actually not that bad, you know? I mean, having it as an option to go somewhere, you know, for a few weeks.
Yeah, especially at 15 euros a day, you know.
And there is a train as well going there.
Is there, really?
Mm-hmm, yeah.
Wow. Yeah, I know nothing about this country. It's really weird. Didn't even know what the capital city was called until we came here. It's a funny sounding capital city, isn't it? You say Podgorica or Podgorica?
I say Podgorica.
Ritsa, that's
Podgorica.
It. Podgorica, that's right. Yeah. Podgorica. I've got to remember to put that Z in there. Okay, so so you've discovered it in 2015, did you say?
Yeah, I discovered it in 2015. And since then, you know, I've been a bit busy in my life in the UK. But then again, I was looking at the market, and I am pretty familiar with the country now. I was just really exploring the properties, you know. And then I encountered last year, I met guys here from Montelibero, you know, through a chat. I was on a chat by freedomain.com or Stefan Molyneux, if you know. And I started chatting there, and I thought, oh, I think I know that person. And he has his own YouTube channel. So I clicked on his YouTube channel, and the latest video he posted was about Montelibero. And I was like, all right, I am in Montenegro. I just learned there is a community called Monte Libera, and I want to go and meet them. So I got in touch with the guys, came down to bar to meet them. And since then, I was following their Telegram channel. And a few months ago, I bought some land in MTL City. So,
am I allowed to ask how much the land was? Is that something you're happy to? I don't know.
I can say.
Was it on the first hand market or the second hand market?
Like, second hand. So I brought it. I bought it from somebody who already bought it.
Right. Okay.
Directly from the fund. So, I mean, I paid 5,000 euro MTLs for it. It's 150 square meters.
And you had to get euro MTLs to buy it?
Yes, I had to use crypto to buy it.
Yeah. It's worth mentioning, just in case. I've just had a 2-hour conversation all about this financial system that you've got going on here, which was confusing me, but I should probably just mention. So there's... You, as a community, Monte Libera, have created a euro stablecoin. It's called the MTML.
Euro MTL.
Yeah. And you all spend that amongst yourselves, and a few of the local businesses now take it and stuff. And,
yeah.
Okay. So if you want to buy land in Monte Libera, you have to use the euro stablecoin. Probably.
Well, that's what I use. Maybe there is any other asset you could use because there are a few tokens. The construction company I know are using another token, so maybe you could discuss that. But I was told your MTLs, yeah.
Yeah, okay. And so you bought a plot of land. What does that mean? been there. There's three buildings. Like, where's your plot, actually? Describe it, because I came in.
Yeah.
On the right, there's two buildings.
Yeah.
One quite big one with apartments, and one that's kind of going to be like a...
commercial building.
Yeah. And then that way, on the left, there's a low building, probably going to be taller, which is for business use.
Business and warehouse.
Yeah. So I'm looking up the hill. Where's yours?
Yeah. So the warehouse is on the left. And my plot is just a bit above the warehouse, slightly more on the left. So I have the view to the coast.
It's just trees at the moment, isn't it? It's like a kind of
there is
a
trees
tree.
and lots of chopped wood.
Oh, on my plot, a big pile of chopped wood.
Oh
yeah, I remember that. I saw it. I was looking at that, thinking you want to keep that wood because that would be great for a fire in your house. Yeah, there was a lot of chopped wood there. Yeah, right. Ah, so yours is there. And like, are you already thinking about what you might do there? I mean, have you got a plan for it or?
So I think I will make a little house there. I love the idea that we are within the community. I love the location. I think it's beautiful. We've got a great co-working bin built not far from there, maybe 15 minutes walk by a German guy. It's a big co-working space for like 100 plus people.
Outside of
MTL City. Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Just down the hill a little bit?
Just down the hill a little bit, yeah.
Wow. Okay. Yeah. So before we go on then, are you now working here? Have you brought your company or your business with you? Or?
Look, it's... so my daughter is 3 years old. And when she was one, I went back to work in the UK. And then I realized that it's too difficult. So I just quitted my job and I've been busy with Monte Libero, with my own shoemaking. But it's not a business, but I think it actually will turn into a business because I have so much demand on the shoes I make.
Wow. So you're anticipating running a business from Monte Libero or from the co-working space? Or?
Well, I think I will register a company here in Montenegro, and maybe I will be accepting your MTLs for my shoes.
Wow. What kind of shoes are they?
They're barefoot shoes. I crochet them. So they're crocheted ballet flats / slippers.
Crocheted shoes?
Yeah, yeah.
So they're made out of material? Or?
Yeah, but then I glue the sole to them so you can walk in them when it's not too wet outside and not too muddy.
Wow. So, day to day living expenses, it's just cheap here, or is your husband providing your...
It's both cheap and my husband is providing.
Right. So, no, it makes total sense to me. It's unbelievably expensive in the UK. I live there.
Yeah.
And you need two earners in your family, whoever you are almost these days, which is not good for the family, as far as I can tell. So I don't blame you for moving somewhere like this, for sure.
Yeah, I would say, I mean, it's doable in the UK, but you obviously feel more comfortable here. Plus, I really like the idea that I will be building my self-sufficiency. You know, if I grow my own food, I want to rely less and less on the system. You know,
if you've got 150 square meters?
Yes.
How are you going to grow on that? That's quite small, even you include a house.
Look, that's exactly... So the idea was that I was supposed to buy quite a big plot of land near the ski resort in the mountains, but that deal didn't go through the last moment. But my idea was that this house will be kind of my base in the community by the coast, and then I'll have my garden up in the mountains where I will be in winter skiing and growing my food in summer, you know.
I was going to say, you won't be growing much in the winter if it's a ski resort.
Yeah, exactly. So that was the idea. It didn't happen, that big plot of land didn't happen, but I have a few opportunities and I'm sure I will find something eventually. But it's good to know that I have a base in the community, you know.
When do you anticipate starting to build something then?
So in Montenegro, you are not allowed to build during the tourist season. So May to, I think, September or October.
Right.
So I think I will start around October time.
And what have you got? Like, is there a style of building that you, like, because you're going to be part of a pretty close-knit community up there. Is everyone just allowed to do whatever they want? Or how does it work with building styles, you know, I don't know, height of building, whatever, you know? How are you going to work all that stuff out?
You know, we are a pretty small community. We have our own Telegram chat, actually. And we already have houses, the ones you've seen, that are already been built. So I will just follow that kind of style. You know, I don't want something standing out. And two floors max, you know. We'll probably, as no landlords are building yet, so we'll probably have that conversation when somebody is actually ready to build, you know. But even, I think, by Montenegrin's laws, you cannot build more than three floors without special permission, you know.
Yeah. How, like, you're a libertarian, how did you how long have you been a libertarian? Even, like, I mean, I don't know many libertarians in London. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's not a common experience to find libertarians in the UK. It's not really a thing. Maybe you found that different, did you? Was that a Russian community you were part of? Or?
Actually, no. But I think in the UK you can find all sorts of people, you know. Like, I've got friends who are very much into ayahuasca ceremonies and, you know, this Peruvian shaman things, or people who are into meditation, or... you know, people who saw that this pandemic was used a lot to restrict our rights, and we would go together to march across London, you know, that we're against it. Then I would go to Julian Assange events, you know, to support the case, the cause. And I think there are all sorts of people, really, you know.
What about before you came to the UK, though? Like, when you were in Russia, did you think like that there? When you were at uni, were you an activist, a libertarian activist, or anything like that? Like, how do you?
You know, I think in Russia, first of all, the times when I was growing up were quite a free times. So, the Soviet Union collapsed. I was born just 2 years before it collapsed, and we were very free. for the first, let's say, 10 years since that happened. You know, you could see all sorts of things on the TV. I mean, there were so many different... At school, you were quite free even to wear what you want. You know, I mean, I think the whole system had to rethink itself. So we, as children, had quite lots of freedom available to us. So I kind of grew up quite a free spirit, you know. And then everything that kind of felt kind of, oh, it feels like it restricts my freedom. Oh, or when I moved to the UK, I felt like, oh, I'm not allowed to do this and that. And everything is like, you're kind of under the radar. Like they track you much more than they do in Russia. You feel like, okay, there are more people, have better technology. I'm supposed to follow these rules. And I felt a bit like I'm losing my freedom, you know. So I think it's just kind of going back to naturally being free, you know, how I grew up and with that idea that I had in my mind. So I feel like, you know, that's the main thing for me, to kind of feel free, you know.
And the reason you can feel free here, is that in some part to do with the fact the government's a bit, well, what kind of government is it here? Is it, you know...
Look, it's been such a mess in the government for a very long time, and only recently they elected a new president, and probably things will start changing. But I feel that is the case. I think in Montenegro for so long, the government was so weak that people pretty much make their life decisions without keeping them in mind, you know. And I mean, I like it in that sense, you know, but it's not necessarily just about the government. It's also the way people think, you know, and people, the way people take responsibilities for their life. And look, it's an adventure for me. I might, you know, in a year's time, we might sit down and I might say, oh, you know, I'm really struggling, you know, I don't know. I've just moved. So far, what I know, you know, I'm ready definitely to give it a go, you know.
And your husband moved with you?
He did move with me. Yeah, he will commute back to London once a month, but otherwise we are based here.
Right. Okay. Is that for work? He has to go to and from.
Yeah, he will have to go and attend some meetings there occasionally.
Wow, it's very exciting. It's interesting as well because normally it's the husband or the man that's the one that tries to drag his wife out to a place like this, and you seem to be doing it the other way around. Is he on board with all the kind of ideas of freedom and liberty and stuff?
He is on board, but I think I am really the main driver for that, you know. I think I'm just he had quite a comfortable life in the UK and he could just carry on living it, but I see something different for myself. I now, I guess I now know what I want from life. And he, when he listens to me, he totally gets me and he respects it. And he says, okay, yeah, let's go, let's do it. But I would say, yeah, I would be the one pushing the agenda.
So what's changed in the UK then that's made you realize what you want to do? Are you talking about, you know, COVID lockdowns, blah, 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 whatever? Or was it just something that was on the cards anyway?
Look, I think everything that happened in the past few years just accelerated lots of things that were going on already. You know, CBDC coming, you know, more control, money, not being able to, you know, take your money in cash. Seems like everything is going that way that, you know, they will have that visibility into what you are doing, you know. As well, things like... you know, carbon neutral by 2030, things like that. And you think, okay, tomorrow they will come and say, okay, you can't be traveling too much, you can't be doing this, can't be doing that, you know. So I just don't want to wait till the last moment. And that's why I step back and I say, okay, I will try to start growing my own food, you know, taking my freedom back, having a community, you know, to help to achieve those ideas that I believe in.
And I mean, obviously, an added advantage is that it's a Russian community, or is that obviously that's important, is it?
Look, if it was an international English-speaking community, that wouldn't be a problem for me. But yeah, Russian, I love the Russians, you know. I am Russian myself. And I think Montenegro has a lot of potential. You know, I think, as you said, it's that country that not many people know about. And it has lots of things to uncover, you know. And also lots of space here to try your ideas, you know. And people are lovely, you know. People are very helpful, supportive. They love the Russians as well, which is, you know, we did encounter some kind of hate from some countries, you know, because of this war. It's crazy how the media can influence people's minds, you know. And
was that in while you were in the UK, you mean?
Well, I encountered it a few times. I mean, I deal with it all right, you know, but I know some people would feel uncomfortable, you know, because you just... People see something on the news and they think straight away that you are the problem, that you are part of it, you know, and they started treating you differently. It's crazy how manipulated we became.
Well, I mean, it doesn't make sense that a random Russian person in the UK would necessarily rejoice over what's happening. I find it relatively easy to distinguish between the Russian government and the Russian people. You know,
yeah.
I mean, I obviously can't say the same for everyone, but, you know.
But also, I think, you know, I mean, I think both Putin and Zelensky are the problem. I don't look at Russia as just, okay, that's the main problem. And if we get rid of president, that will sort everything out. I see that there is a bigger agenda and the West is involved quite a lot, you know, and I think lots of people don't see it. You know, they think that Russia is the problem and the only way to solve it is to get rid of the government.
Yeah, it's been hugely polarizing. It's funny how animated people get over it as well, who are nothing to do with that region. You know, it's one of those things that has captured the internet's imagination and polarized everyone again.
Yeah.
You know, like it seems to be that's what happens every single time now. There's no gray area anymore. There's a big issue that happens. There's a, you know, whatever it is, and you're either on one side or the other. And I don't know why that is. I think probably social media might have something to do with it. The social media bubbles we find ourselves in that keep reaffirming these things to us. But fortunately, within the libertarian community, on the whole, I find people far more pragmatic about looking at these things, you know, because it's all grey area as far as I'm concerned. I mean, how is it here with, you said that they love the Russians here. You know, like, it's, I like I say, I'm really not very au fait with this part of the world. You give me the impression it's one of those countries where people are just live and let live.
Yeah. Look, it has a really long history. So there have been some Turkish people coming and establishing themselves in Bar, actually. I would just say, you know, if you look at the countries that are close to Russia, like you look at the Baltic countries, or you look at the countries like Georgia, Armenia, who used to be part of the Soviet Union. And because the history for them was quite recent, they have, you know, like when there is already some problem, kind of a conflict sitting, anything on top of that just aggravates it, you know. Whereas I find that this part of the world, Serbia, Montenegro, they had a pretty good experience, you know, working with the Russians. And, you know, so we kind of don't feel any hatred towards us here, you know. Even, again, I say lots of people, just like you said, they can tell the government from the people, but not everybody can. And again, it's...
Maybe there's a few Russians here as well kind of fleeing Russia currently, especially men who are, you know, I know that that's a thing, isn't it? All around. Like I was in Ulaanbaatar in Mongolia, like this just gone in this winter. And there are a lot of Russians now living there even, who just all popped over the border from Russia in order to not be conscripted.
Yeah.
But I would imagine there may be here. Is there, I mean, are you necessarily just, you know, mixing with the Russian fraternity out here? Or, you know, is it, I noticed that up at Montelibro, there are actually a couple of plots which have been bought by non-Russian people.
Yeah.
How's the rest of the community here, you know, in the town? You know, are there many expats or is it, as in from further afield?
Well, I see there is much more interest, and just last week at our lunch events on Saturdays, there were a few French speakers and English speakers there, and they were very, very interested. They started asking me about the tokenomics, how to connect to it. So I will be meeting them next week, helping them. Then we have one Dutch person who was interested in doing some projects on our land towards Albanian border. So I think because originally we are quite a Russian-speaking community, it is a bit more difficult, and not many people speak good English, but it is supposed to be an international community, you know, and we are definitely open to that idea, and we want it to be that way, you know, and we want more Montenegrins to know about us as well, you know. I guess it just happened to be that the majority people are Russian speakers. They're great programmers. They wrote this tokenomics amazing. But yeah, we want to eventually take it to the next level. And I understand that it's not for everybody to move to Montenegro because, yeah, it is quite a, you know, special country. Like Europeans from the European Union, they'll probably look at other countries like Portugal, where it's easier to move rather than here. Here you need to think of residence, you know, how do I make it happen, the language, you know. So I get them. But at the same time, you know, I think we can still make it work.
When you said you were looking around for a place to move to, you said Portugal and Montenegro came up on your radar. Is that quite a commonly known that Portugal is a good place to go if you want to kind of start afresh, you know, maybe live off the land a bit, you know?
I think it is. I mean, I think it's quite a big off-grid place now to look at because the land is quite cheap and the community is there, you know, there are lots of English speakers. I don't know, what's your feel of that?
We came from Lisbon to come here, and there was a libertarian conference there, and the last interview I did was with a couple that had bought 150 odd hectares down in Portugal. And I know that, for example, they're friendly to digital nomads. I think there are certain benefits you can get, tax breaks. There's also no capital gains tax on cryptocurrency, et cetera, et cetera. So they're kind of like leaning into all that stuff. And I think for obvious reason, I think there were, you know, the country, I think, was being drained a little bit by the rest of Europe. People were leaving and, I mean, it's also hugely cheap as well. I mean, you know, like I think it's probably one of the cheapest countries in Europe. You know, you get a euro, you know, a coffee is under a euro in a cafe. You know, what's the price of a coffee here? Mind you, it's different, isn't it? It's not like, it's not like a coffee as I know it.
Exactly.
It's one of those really, is all the coffee in the thing, and it doesn't really taste like coffee either. It tastes like soil.
Yeah, that's why I don't really drink it that much. And, you know, when people tell me, oh, the coffee here is really cheap, it's like €1.20. But then the mug is like this big. I mean, it's not a mug, it's like a mini cup, you know. So what you get in the UK is that big cup of coffee, you know, £3, let's say, but, you know, it's like a decent size. So I wouldn't compare the prices based on that coffee.
No, fair enough. Talk to me about Montelibro, the Montelibro community. You just mentioned lunch events. What are you talking about there?
Yeah, so we organized, It's a weekly event. It's breakfast on Wednesday and lunch on Saturday. We announce it to different Telegram groups, so people know about it in bar or in different areas, and they can come to those breakfasts or lunches and discuss Monte Libre or what they do.
And where are they? Here in the
not in the club, sorry, at the restaurants. So it's usually we now have two venues for breakfast and for lunch, and people can come over. They can get to meet us, learn about the tokenomics if they want, or they can just mingle, you know, with other people, because lots of people now who move from Russia or from Russian-speaking countries, they really they have to reestablish their life. So, you know, I think it's a bit of a support for them as well to maybe make new friends, you know, connect with people locally. Again, we do we help people with businesses if they have a business idea or if they want to bring their own business from the country where they used to live. We will help them. We'll support them however we can, you know, network. Sometimes they can get some money from the fund if they've got a good business idea, you know. So we will be launching offline meetings for Business Incubator.
What about this place? The club, everyone calls it. Seems like, is the door, do they ever lock the door? Is the door always open? Is it, people seem to be coming and going all the time and kids running around and, you know.
Yeah, look, it is, if you are a member, you're welcome to come. There is always somebody hosting the place, you know, the one of the ladies that you met.
And they're cooking as well, right?
She wouldn't cook, but there are some other people who would come and cook.
Yeah, no, I mean, yeah. We've been fed twice here, and so has everyone else. And without, what's that all? How does it work? Like, you pay a kind of membership or something, is it?
So I actually do pay a membership, but I'm just one of the few people who do pay the membership. Otherwise, as long as you follow the non-aggression principles, so you're part of the community and somebody brought you with them, so at least you are friends with one of the members, then they can bring you in, introduce you, and then you can start coming on your own and you can have food. We have the Telegram chat where they would post what kind of dishes are on today. And then we have different activities like English speaking club or yoga classes, or we watch a film together. Then we can come up with ideas what we would like to do, you know. So karaoke sometimes.
And will the one of the big building that's being built on the site at the moment, will that become this building eventually? Is that the plan, do you know?
I think there is an idea to move, to have the club in MTL City. I don't know when it's going to happen, and it's not 100% certain yet. So
you're talking about some, like, English club or, you know, who is this? I get the sense, and don't misunderstand me here, but it seems quite chaotic, if you know what I mean. Right, but in a good way, in an anarchy, in the way that anarchy is chaotic, and decentralized. So, I mean, how you're relatively new to the community, I suppose, or have you been coming prior to moving here?
Oh yeah, I've been coming a few times, so right. I know a few people.
Okay, tell me about my view then. Is it like that? Does it work? I mean,
yeah.
What's seems good about it is that it does work, and you know, it isn't top down decision making. It's the complete antithesis of that. So talk to me about that, and you know, the pros of it, the cons of it. Is it, you know,
look, it just you know, if you have an idea, bring it up, let's put it on the table, let's discuss it. And yeah, we can potentially make it happen. You know, we are quite, maybe because we are still a relatively small community, probably as we are going to grow, it's going to change a little bit. But for now, it works quite well. Everybody's quite welcoming to different ideas. So whatever you are good at, though, you will find the support, you know. The club, yeah, look, it's just, it's open from 12 to 10 every day. If you want to come over, you're very welcome. Sometimes, you know, you can book, reserve the dishes because they might run out of dishes. So you might say, oh, I'll come in a few hours. Can you keep that dish for me? You know, so they're quite flexible.
And does it make a profit then? You have to, so the food you have to buy with the Euro stablecoin.
Yeah.
And is it run like that? Is it run as a profit-making thing?
Well, look, it is supposed to make profit. Yeah, I think it is. I mean, we have the person who is responsible for the club and everything that's going on here, but it is making profit now. I hold a few shares of the club, so they have their own token. So I bought a few. So basically, some people hold more than others, you know, but pretty much I'm like a shareholder as well.
And what does that mean for you? Do you get a dividend, or do you get to choose what happens, or anything like that?
So we do get dividends from MTLs. If you hold MTLs, you do get dividends from the club. We don't get dividends. As the value of the club will be growing, our money will be growing. So we are interested in making it successful.
Yeah.
If you know what
I mean. What, if any, ideas have you bought to? You were saying that if you've got an idea, put it on the table. Is there anything you've been particularly interested in that you've been bringing?
Yeah. So, again, because I'm into permaculture, we are now working with another person who has some knowledge in permaculture to make kind of forest garden project on the land that the Montelibero owns. So it's all kind of been planned now. But they're very open to it. You know, now in MTL City, for example, they said, Tanya, if you want to grow your own food and veggies this summer, because nobody built their house yet there, let's make it that way. So you can grow your food on that land. And then just whoever owns the plot, if they agree that you use their land, you'll be giving them a particular amount of whatever you grew, for example, you know, 20% or something like that, you know. So it's all up in the air, you know. You come with an offer, they say, yeah, you can do it, you know.
You should try and grow something on the land of the guy from India, because he probably won't want any veg in return, will he?
Yeah,
what are you
going
to do, send it to India?
I'll probably start with his land. It's a good idea.
Well, but how many of the other land owners do you know? Like, do you know who your neighbors are going to be, for example?
I know them. Yes, I know my neighbors, and I know all the people on the chat. They're all there, all the landlords. I haven't met all of them in person because actually not all of them are in Montenegro yet. But yeah, we do know them. We communicate. We discuss different projects. Sometimes we, contribute to, for example, building the road. We would pay some money towards making that road around our houses. That's how we communicate.
We were laughing just in the last interview that the roads were all privately provided, and well, it's a meme, isn't it? Who's going to make the roads?
Yeah,
you're actually making your own roads.
Yeah, did you see the road is quite good?
Well, the new one coming in. Yeah, once you get into Montelibro, then it's like, you know, still a dirt track. I presume the same kind of road's going to carry on in there.
It will be all around.
It's going to be quite interesting, actually, to come back in. I mean, how many years do you think it'll be before you could drive up there and there'll be this kind of sparkling libertarian paradise or whatever it's going to be there? What do you think? I mean, you know how things work, especially my reservation about, like, really free-forming projects like this is that when you have a lot of people trying to make one decision, often things get stifled. Whereas when you have someone in charge delegating the decisions, things happen smoother, obviously, because everyone's being one person making the decisions. And both ways have their merits. But when I'm thinking about this one where, you know, you have 20 people all voting on something and one person can veto the vote and blah, 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 you know, do you ever wonder that it might end up being, you know, stalling because no one can make any decisions? Or are you confident that, you know, it's gonna keep moving quite quickly? I mean, is it moving quickly now, according to you?
It is moving quickly, really. Yeah. I also feel because we have the construction company who work there, they also part of Monteliberal. They're also Russian speakers, and they bought some land as well as landlords. I feel like that keeps us moving faster because they have real interest into, okay, let's carry on, let's build it, let's make it, you know. And then, this is one of the biggest projects of Monteliberal now. So they are very, very like pushing it forward, you know. And look, I will start building a house after October. And, you know, if people start building later, better for me, I'll be growing food on their land.
Are you going to get someone to design your house, or are you just going to say, build me that? Or is there going to be an architect?
Oh, well, I'll definitely bring an architect, just looking at different houses here in Montenegro. I mean.
But interestingly, because I've built a smallish kind of, it wasn't a house, it was an annex to my house, but it was detached. And I did pretty much scribble it down on a piece of paper and say, do this and make it this big. And the builders are pretty good. You know, I think sometimes you don't need to pay an architect a lot of money, which I don't know how much they charge here, but back home, they charge a lot of money. But if your building is simple, it's actually a pretty simple process building a building. I was surprised. Once you know what goes into the structure of a building, you realize actually it's quite simple, you know. And the main part of the building as well, and this is a warning, I suppose, as well, goes up really quickly. But then the finishing takes about 10 times as long. So in the beginning, you're like so excited to see this thing getting built really quickly. And then, you know, 3 years later, it's still not finished, but it's been it's looked almost finished for about 3 years, yeah. You know. But tell me what your plan is then for your house, say.
Look, I mean, I would have it as a base for now here.
No, I mean visually.
Visually. Look, I really loved the place we lived last in the UK. So it's a 60 square meters, two bedroom, semi-detached. Mine will be detached, but I really like the layout of it. You know, I want it to be quite small because the plot is quite small and we are in the city.
Well, wait a minute, 150 square meters. So you're like, what's that? 30 by, say 30, wait a minute, 30, wait a minute. God.
Yeah, 60 square meters, two floors will be 30 on the ground floor and 30 on the top floor. Yeah.
So how much, what are the rough dimensions of the building going to be according to you?
I think it will be maybe.
If it was 6 meters long, say, yes. By 6 meters, that's 36.
So it will be like 6 by 5 or 7 by, you know, yeah. Whatever.
That's pretty big. Like I built something, the main part of I had two floors at 6 meters by 6 meters. And then I had a bit on the side, which was 3 meters by 6 meters, which was a single story. But the 6 by 6s were really nice, big size rooms. And I didn't even put any, you know, like partitions in mine. I left them both completely open. It's lovely, a giant bedroom and a big, you know, like open space with an open roof. But yeah, that's that. And then that would be, say that was roughly 40 square meters, then you still have a lot of area around it for a garden.
Yeah, I can still put a little garden. There is a really beautiful tree on the land, so I want to play kind of around it and make it as maybe a tree house for my daughter. You know, but I think eventually it will be either our base here in the community and by the coast and have a bigger plot of land further away, or maybe we can rent it out, or maybe we will sell it eventually. We will see what we do, but it will definitely be my base to start with while I'm learning more about Montenegro.
What do you think if it's a I've called this an intentional community. Is that a, you know, like, because everyone seems to have the same intention, building a sort of non-aggression policy, libertarianly minded community. So if you decide to rent somewhere out and you're, say you wanted to turn your thing into an Airbnb, how do you stop people with of very conflicting ideology coming to stay or whatever?
Yeah, so that building that you've already seen on the land that's already built there with the flats, so those flats will be mostly for rent during the season. So short-term rent. So what we spoke about is if it's short-term rent, we won't be particularly, you know, picky. But hopefully our city will be so significant by then that only libertarians will be coming and will have so much demand that no one else will want to come and stay over, you know. But yeah, if anybody wants to rent then long-term, then they would have to follow the principle, non-aggression principle, and they would have to understand what kind of community they're staying in.
Yeah, I suppose you are positioning yourself as libertarian community, so I can't imagine why, you know, a socialist would want to come and come on holiday.
Exactly.
Maybe to try and disrupt it. I don't know.
Look, if he wants to challenge us, come on. But he might end up spoiling his own holiday.
Yeah, but socialists don't go on holiday, do they? It's like, I don't think it's part of the socialist ideology, isn't it? You get allocated a holiday, maybe. I don't know. Anyway, well, look, I got a final question. We're just about up to the hour. Say you had, you were granted a 1 year sabbatical from whatever you're doing now, which was paid for, and you can do anything you wanted for a year. What would you do?
I would probably go and experience life in the tropics, maybe Peru or countries like that. And then just invest a bit more time into what I'm already doing, really.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. Nothing wrong with that. I mean, why Peru? Just like, it seemed a bit random.
Look, the tropics, probably anywhere in the tropics, but Peru.
Peru's quite cold as well, though.
There are parts of Peru that are cold.
Have you been before?
I haven't, but I have a few friends who now actually bought a big plot of land there. It's mostly to protect the tropics because of what's going on, you know, with the corporations coming over and taking the land for whatever.
What, a group of your friends got together and bought how much? Well, like a lot of land.
Like 40 hectares, I think, or 40 acres, need to confirm.
Of rainforest?
Yeah,
and
rainforest.
And are they going to live there as well? Or?
I think their intention is to move there eventually, you know.
Wow, so you know quite a few people doing this kind of stuff then?
I know.
Tell me about some more then. Like, where else are people buying plots of land and you know, trying to live?
I think Bali is quite big.
Yes.
I think Zanzibar, I know of the community in Zanzibar who established themselves after all this pandemic craziness.
Yeah, Zanzibar was good on lockdowns, wasn't it, as I recall?
Yeah.
I think they didn't impose any lockdowns.
They didn't, but then their president somehow disappeared or was killed or...
Really?
Got it. Yeah, yeah, that's the story, yeah. And now they've got all the same things going on regarding COVID.
That's right. Now I remember. Didn't Tony Blair go and visit them to say you need... No, that's somewhere else. Wow. Mm. So, okay. And so, all right. Where else then? Mexico. I know that because I've been there. I've seen a lot of people fled to Mexico during the lockdowns, and a lot of them have stayed now.
Thailand.
Yeah.
Thailand. Yeah. Yeah, look, the tropics really, this is something I really want to try experience, you know, living in the tropics, because the food I eat is mostly tropical food. So Montenegro will be, subtropics is nice, but not as easy as in the tropics.
What do you mean tropical food? Fruit?
Yeah, I mostly eat fruit, lots of coconut milk, lots of bananas, mangoes, papayas, this kind of food, durian.
Yeah, you can't quite grow them in your garden here, can you? You're not, are you vegan or something like that?
I eat some fish, but I avoid other animal products. But I do eat fish.
Right. Well, thanks, Tatiana, for talking, and good luck.
Thank you.
I hope, like I say, I'm imagining myself coming back. I'm glad I saw it at this stage, because either it doesn't work or it does work, and either way, I get a story to tell, because I think a lot of these ideas that we're sort of talking about are all work in progress, and the more concrete examples of them working in real life, the better. And I think the truly sort of decentralized one, like, you know, the kind of decentralized version, is the trickiest one. I think the one that's the hardest to manifest, because there's so many people with so many opinions. And I'm imagining myself coming back and seeing, you know, that sweeping road carrying on up and then going around it. It just kind of goes around in a circle like that. Hopefully you'll be there on your veranda or something.
Thank you.
Eating a mango or whatever. But
tangerine here, probably. Tangerine. Or a kiwi.
Okay. Well, save me one. And thanks for talking. It's been really lovely speaking to you.
Thank you.